Hey guys, welcome back to the Pistols Firing Podcast. My name is Kyle Porter. No intro music this week because a long story that you definitely don't care about. My laptop is not with me. I had to send it in, get it repaired. All of our files were on that. So using a different computer, don't have some of the files. So no music this week. But just wanted to say how much we've been enjoying doing this podcast, ready for a new football season. Carson and I always have fun with that, and I hope you guys are enjoying the new look of the site, and please keep giving us feedback just on what you like, what you don't like, what you'd like to see in the future. We definitely take that to heart, consider it, process it, and hopefully you continue to build just a really good site for Oklahoma State fans. So here's to a great year, and hope you guys enjoy the show.
We are back at it. Welcome back to another edition of the Pistols Firing Podcast. It is officially game week. A week from today, they will be kicking off the season. Kyle, we've made it. We've plowed through the dog days of summer. You've been grinding on golf, but it's time for college football, man.
It is time for college football. I am I'm excited. I think this season is so interesting. We might have talked about this before, but to me, it's almost more exciting than 2017 just because you don't know what to expect. I have no idea what to expect this year. And to me, it's more interesting to try to figure out a team and a conference and a national playoff race when I go in with these kinds of expectations. So I don't know if that's how it is for you, but I think OU is going to be good. I think Kansas is going to be bad, and that's about all I know. And maybe that's all we know every year, but it feels like that more so this year than maybe in the past few.
Yeah, I mean, there is a certain level of excitement for the unknown. I think there was so much hype last year, and it was such a letdown of a season that I can't say I'm more excited for this season than I was last. But I will say that it's been like we can typically tell, right, in an off season how Gundy's acting, how good the team's going to be. He sure seems like he's in a good mood. He sure seems confident in Taylor Cornelius. He sure seems confident in a lot of the young players that are going to play. I remember 2014, Gundy was like miserable. Mm-hmm. He knew how bad they were going to be. So I am excited for that. I think Gundy is a good barometer for how good the season's going to be. And I'm like you, Kyle. Like the more we get closer and closer, the more optimistic I am about OSU contending. Maybe not for the Big 12 championship, but, you know, winning 9, maybe 10 games.
How surprised would you be if Oklahoma State was playing in the Big 12 championship game?
I would be surprised, but I wouldn't be shocked because I'm not very confident in West Virginia. I think we're going to look back on all the preseason prognostications about West Virginia and be like, why were we so high on them? Like, Will Greer's a good quarterback, but since when has West Virginia been a Big 12 title contender? TCU is, I think they're going to be, they're probably my pick to meet Oklahoma and Dallas just because Gary Patterson's much like Mike Gundy in that he's consistent, but he plays better defense. But no, OSU's right, in my opinion, OSU is right there with West Virginia and TCU. I'm going to have to see it. I'm going to have to see Taylor Cornelius. It's still a total unknown for me, but the way Mike Gundy's talking about Taylor Cornelius, the way the whole team is, it sure sounds like this guy's going to be good. I've talked with certain people up there that say his arm is as good as Mason Rudolph's, maybe a little better as far as just pure throwing the football. Now I need to see that to say that. Well, they're not saying that he's a better quarterback than Mason Rudolph. That would be nonsense. That'd be silly. His record speaks for itself, but they're saying that he has the talent to do that. They don't know if he can do it when he's not wearing a green jersey, when guys are flying at him. That'll be the big thing. But no, I would be surprised but not shocked if they made it to Dallas.
And yeah, here's my thing with that. I'm not picking Oklahoma State to play for the Big 12 title. I think it's probable that they won't. But what's the difference between Oklahoma State right now and TCU this time last year? You know, and TCU goes on to play for the Big 12 championship.
They had Kenny Trill, a guy that at least played and started the year before. That's probably the only difference. And the defense, I would say, is a big difference.
I just, I, well, and that's the thing. I think Oklahoma State's defense is going to be pretty good.
Why?
I do. Because they've got some guys. I mean, they've got Calvin Bundage. They've got Edison, the ninth president, Edison McCrew. The defensive line is good. If you look, and Rob,
the ninth president. I forgot about that one.
That was you. You,
I know.
You made that up. Robert Allen brought this up at Stillwater Media Days, and I thought it was a good point. If you look back at Gundy's best defenses since he's been there, I think two of the three best defenses have been the architect has been a first-year defensive coordinator. Bill Young in 2009? Is that right? Do you remember how good that defense was?
Yeah.
They had their best receiver had 470 yards and they won nine games or something. And then obviously 2013, the best defense in what I think was the best defense in school history, Glenn Spencer's first year. So I do think that there is, I don't think that this year's defense is going to be good because of those things, but I think that there's a trend that you can look at of new look defensive coordinators having success specifically at Oklahoma State within the Big 12. And I think that could continue this year because you've got some experience in the secondary. You've got a really good defensive line. I think there's concern at linebacker depth, but I think they've got some guys if they can stay healthy.
Well, that's my deal, Kyle, is they've had guys for a long time on defense. I mean, Trey Flowers, Emmanuel Ogba, I mean, they've had guys drafted, and they just, as I've said, and you know, the sum of the parts do not equal the sum of the parts on defense. When you look at the athletes, if I screw that up again,
is that the phrase?
I don't know. You know what I'm trying to say. I always screw that phrase up. I should quit attempting to say it.
Yeah,
I know what I'm getting at.
It's too complicated.
They have guys that look like they can play, and then they give up 800 yards to Oklahoma. And look, yeah. I know you can say, oh, it's Baker Mayfield. Well, Baker wasn't putting up 800 yards against anybody else. He wasn't scoring 60 against everybody else. It was only OSU. You go back to the Iowa State game where a third-string quarterback, I think that was the downfall for Glenn Spencer, was them getting lit up by backup quarterbacks down the stretch, the Iowa State game, the Kansas State game. So maybe a new voice will change all that, Kyle, but I gotta see it, man. They've been so bad on defense since the 2013 season, Glenn's first year that you mentioned. I got to see it. And I know people, they're preaching this aggressive nature, but that was Glenn's MO too. So I got to see it.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I just think it's within the realm of possibility that they could be pretty good on defense. And I think that I think we talked about this last week, but just the shift in philosophy on defense, I think will benefit an offense that is going to be pretty good. And again, we've been probably doing too much preseason stuff, and I'm just talking myself into all these different scenarios, but I do think that there's a path that exists in which Oklahoma State could potentially play for the Big 12 title. They've got a pretty decent schedule, honestly. I mean, you got to go on the road to OU. You're going to lose to OU anyway. It doesn't matter where you play them. So you don't necessarily want to play them at home. And they get Texas at home. They get West Virginia at home. Going to TCU is not great, but you want to go to Kansas. You don't want to waste that as a home game. So I just think, I don't know, things set up pretty nicely for them in terms of the year following Rudolph and Washington exiting because of how many skill position guys they have that could be awesome because you're going to have a new look defense and because the schedule is – it's not easy, but it could certainly be a lot more difficult.
They've actually had more wins in Norman than Stillwater when it comes to Bedlam, which is kind of weird.
I want that game in Norman because if you're probably going to lose it anyway, you might as well do it on the road. And like you said, they've had, what, two wins there and one at home under Gundy? Is
that right? Yep, one at home, one on the road under Gundy. But dating back to Les Miles and Bob Simmons, they won a Norman more than Stillwater, which is ironic.
I keep forgetting Gundy's 2-12?
2-11.
Jeez.
And he could have won, what, maybe three or four more? Maybe three. Four might be generous. But
we could do a whole month's worth of blog posts just on What?
But no, you're definitely right though, Kyle. I'm looking at the schedule. It shapes up pretty well. I mean, the swing games for me are Texas at home and
Boise.
Boise is going to determine a lot. But as far as in conference,
yeah,
two biggest games are clearly Texas at home and at TCU for me. West Virginia at home doesn't scare me. I'm sorry.
Really?
The closer we get to the season, the more positive I'm getting about Oklahoma State and the more negative I'm getting about West Virginia. I mean, when have they ever been good? Have they even challenged for the league since they came into the league? They have not. They win like 7 games every year. The Vegas win total, Kyle, has them at like 7. Vegas doesn't think they're any good.
What do they have Oklahoma State at? Like 8.5 or something?
It's more than West Virginia. I think it's like 8.
I want to take what you're saying and run with it a little bit. Can we stop with the whole, like, what does Mike Gundy have to do at Oklahoma State to get the benefit of the doubt in preseason polls? Look, preseason polls are stupid. They're whatever. I don't care, but, or apparently I do care. They don't matter. They don't mean anything. But I just don't understand why, like why does Oklahoma State and Mike Gundy not, like his body of work has been unbelievable. Like, look at his body of work since 2010 when they basically flipped the offense and changed everything up. His body of work is unreal. I'm going to do a post on this, I think, later this week or beginning of next week. You look at winning percentage over the last 5 years, over the last 10 years, Oklahoma State is among the top 10, 12, 15 teams in the country. And yet, every year where they maybe lose some guys, they get – people just it's almost like Gundy has to prove it all over again. And I don't understand why Texas doesn't have to do that, why West Virginia doesn't necessarily have to do that. Why is it that Gundy and Oklahoma State do? And why, you know, I get that he hasn't won a ton of conference titles, but I just feel like Gundy continues to prove his consistency at the highest level. And maybe they're just, maybe they're not ranked in the AP poll because they don't have a proven quarterback. Maybe it's as simple as that. But Texas ahead of them? I just think that's kind of weak.
No, it totally is. But I think the coaches recognize what you're saying, Kyle. Like, OSU was ranked 25th by the coaches poll. I think the coaches realize, like, Gundy gets the benefit of the doubt. And I'm with you. Like, I don't understand why people don't give him the credit he deserves. I think it's trending more that way. I think you saw that with the coaches poll. But again, I cannot put Texas over OSU. Jake Trotter came out with his rankings. We love Jake, friend of the show. I tweeted him. I said, I can't put – he had Texas in fourth over Oklahoma State in fifth. And I just sent to him, I said, with Texas's quarterback situation and Gundy's track record, there's no way I can put Texas above OSU. There's just – it's an impossibility for me. And I get I guess I understand why Texas is ranked every year, because they're Texas. But Kyle, they haven't won 10 games since 2009. And Gundy's won it 10 games for the last 5 years. So I'm with you. And that's why I think I'm getting more and more positive about OSU's chances this year, is Gundy just doesn't have really disastrous seasons other than that year every single quarterback on the roster, including Gundy's dog, probably got hurt that year. But no, I totally agree with you. And Texas is what it is, Kyle. They're just going to be ranked. Like, you get down to the 21, 22 range when you're filling out a poll, and I think people are just like, oh, it's Texas, it's Tom Herman, they got to be better this year. Let's put Texas in there. So I think it's laziness. I think people just look at the quarterbacks. To me, that's the only reason people are picking West Virginia to finish second. They just go, oh, Will Grier, David Sills, let's go. And they ignore all the other positions on the team. It's just – it's kind of a perfect storm for OSU to not be ranked. They lose Washington and Rudolph. West Virginia comes back with their guys, and Texas has a new coach, even though he had the same results as Charlie Strong.
Did you see Jerry Palm's Big 12 predictions?
He's a big fan of OSU. I remember him during basketball season just trashing OSU. What did he say?
OU 1, Texas 2, West Virginia 3, TCU 4, Iowa State 5, Kansas State 6. Oklahoma State 7, and then Tech, Baylor, and Kansas.
I think he just has some scars from his mentions during basketball season. He said, I'm just going to put OSU 7 just to piss these people off. I mean, Texas too. Get out of here. Like, just leave. Just go. That's my nonsense.
My man Tom Fornelli has OU 1, Oklahoma State 2, Texas 3.
Texas. I mean, does anyone think Sam Ellinger with a hard G?
Yeah, hard G.
Is winning the conference or contending this year? I just, for me, Kyle, who, like, remember Tom Herman's moment at Media Days when he was asked, like, what difference makers do you have? Like, just go down the roster. Who at Texas is going to win them games at any position? Any. They don't have one all Big 12 caliber player on offense. Zero.
It's unfathomable. How does Oklahoma State have, like, we were talking about this maybe earlier this summer or last year or something, like, who's the last great Texas wide receiver? Like, great. And Oklahoma State's had, like, four of them in the last 8 years.
The last good receiver I can remember from Texas is Marquise Goodwin, but he was just okay in college. He's actually doing pretty well in the NFL.
Williams? Yeah, I don't understand them. They don't make sense. Like, you get all these guys and you either can't develop them or your systems are garbage. I don't get it. It doesn't add up. But yeah, again, like, prove something. I mean, it's kind of like I kind of view them the way that you view Jim Knowles and Oklahoma State's defense. It's like, just show me something, you know?
Yeah. Well, just objectively, just look at the roster. I mean, there's just nothing stands out. I mean, you could argue they were one of the better defenses in the Big 12. I would agree with that. But they lost, you know, some of their best. They lost their best players off that defense. They lost the defensive tackle, the safety. They lost a lot. So it's kind of, you know, if people want to dock OSU for losing Washington and Rudolph, well, Texas's vaunted defense lost their best players, and they have no offensive players to speak of. I mean, I don't know. I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't either. Okay, we need to do a toast, Carson. It's time for the Coop Ale Works Toast of the Week. Coop Ale Works bring great tasting craft beer in Oklahoma City. Try the flagship F5 IPA, the bold DNR Belgian Strong Ale, or the refreshing Horny Toad Blonde. For your next watch party, tailgate, or get together with friends, enjoy a cold Coop Ale Works, and please remember to drink responsibly. I got some Oktoberfest in the fridge right now, Carson. I'm already prepped for football season. I haven't drank any yet, but it's on ice, so we're good to go.
Two traditions unlike any other: college football season getting started and Oktoberfest debuting along with it. Yes, in the orange can.
I'm fired up. Orange and black. Who are you toasting this week?
Well, I'm going to crack open an Oktoberfest. Why not? I had an F5 on the golf course yesterday, but I'll crack a Oktoberfest since we're in the spirit. And I'm going to toast one Drew Brown, who apparently has won the backup job over Spencer Sanders, who we all kind of thought might challenge for the job. And he's third string. I do wonder if Gundy's just playing the seniority card with that, or trying to pump the brakes on, like, obviously Cornelius is the starter. I'm not saying otherwise. Just, it seems like we haven't heard the last of Spencer Sanders, in my opinion. But I think, Kyle, Drew Brown intrigues me a lot. And
yeah,
you've been
all about him.
I haven't seen him play a whole. I mean, I have more film to watch of Drew Brown than I have Taylor Cornelius. I'll put it that way.
A lot.
And he played at Hawaii, nowhere near the amount of talent around him that he'll have at OSU. And he put up some good numbers and had some really good plays, and just he strikes you so much as like a Baker Light. He's obviously not Baker Mayfield, but he's kind of shorter. He's got the scrambling ability. I read those quotes that I think Mark Cooper had from his coach at Hawaii, and just he's that guy that, like, what was that Bill Simmons' old thing? Like, which quarterback do they throw the keys to if, like, four quarterbacks are going on a road trip? Like, I think they throw the keys to Drew Brown. That's just kind of the impression I get from people I've talked to as well. It's Cornelius' job, but if he slips up at all, I'm kind of intrigued what Drew Brown could do in there. And he obviously has impressed Gundy. Gundy has said he learned the offense really quick. So it's good to have a backup option that you can have some confidence in. And I do. I'm pretty confident in Drew Brown. If if Cornelius slips up.
Yeah, that's good. That is going to be interesting. I can't believe you didn't take the guy that I'm toasting. I was going to toast Mike Yurcich because I think I found my sweet spot for generating traffic and page views this fall. Not that he hasn't been in the past, but we'll talk about that in a second. I'm going to toast somebody who I don't believe is actually old enough to consume alcohol in this country. Victor Hovland, 118th U.S. amateur champion. He won at an iconic venue, Pebble Beach. Just torched everybody in match play. It was awesome. He's not even. I was talking so much trash to my golf friends about how he's not even Oklahoma State's best guy. Like he's like their second or third guy.
You might want to revise that statement.
That's probably not actually true because he's like the number three amateur in the world.
And Alan Bratton put him up first. Come on.
But in terms of pro ceiling, he's not their top guy, which I think is super interesting. But yeah, congrats to him. Toast to him for. I'll do a Fly Me Away IPA because he had to be just on cloud nine the whole trip back to Stillwater. I thought it was so interesting to watch him because he seemed kind of unfazed by the whole deal. I mean, you see these other guys that he's playing against. He beats Cole Hammer in the semis. He beats Devin Bling from UCLA in the finals, who was kind of a, like, obviously you have to be really good to get to the US Amateur Finals, but he's not like a guy. Like, Cole Hammer's a guy. Like, he's at Texas. He's pedigree, the whole deal. Devin Bling was like the 307th ranked amateur in the world. So it's not, he just, it is, it's,
he got hot out, in semis, yeah.
Yeah, he's out of his world. He's out of his box. And Hovland didn't even play that well in the finals and just housed him. So yeah, Fly Me Away IPA to Victor Hovland for capturing Oklahoma State's fifth U.S. amateur title.
I don't have the math on this as far as total holes led, but six matches trailed one hole at the USAM. Hovland went 3-0 at the NCAA, so he's 9-0 in his last nine matches. How good is that? And I bet you, I'd be willing to bet he was only down maybe one or two holes up in Stillwater, if that. So he's been just thoroughly dominant in match play. And yeah, it is funny, Kyle. I was watching it at the clubhouse when he was playing. I think it was Hammer. And the guys I was with was like, oh, Hovland's playing. I was like, yeah, he's their number one guy. And they're like, no, he's not. He's Matthew Wolf's their number one guy. I was like, guys, I watched Alan Bratton draft his lineup. Like, Hovland is his unquestioned number one. So it kind of speaks to what you were saying. Like, he's not even the best guy. Like, most people assume Matthew Wolf's the best guy since he won Freshman of the Year. But Hovland is just – what's going to translate well for him, Kyle, is you're right. He was so unfazed, so cold-blooded, so good on the greens. He just fairways and greens you to death and makes putts. Golf's a simple game. If you hit in the fairway, you hit it green in regulation, and you make good putts, you're going to win. And the only time he would lose a hole, Kyle, is when he made bogey. All he had to do was make pars, and he was winning most of those holes. That's how difficult Pebble Beach is. So he was incredible. That shot he hit off the ice plant, off the side of the hill.
Joke.
How absurd was that? He got that up and down. It really is, like, I thought you put it well. It's been the summer of OSU golf. And now, you know, you had Bushu winning the Canadian AM for the second straight year. Obviously, Hovland.
Send Wolf to the Mexican AM to get the North American sweep. I don't know. We need to look into that.
Well, I follow his swing coach on social media, and he was hitting balls, and I think he had the line that this is his first time hitting balls in a couple weeks, and this was a while back, so maybe he had to have been hurt. There's no way he wouldn't play in that because he tried to qualify for the U.S. Open.
Yeah, he played in the I think he played in the Western AM. I don't know. I'm saying things that I don't have the – get your facts straight, you know.
But But Wolf and Hovland are back next year, Kyle. And Hovland told Joe Buck he wants to play two more years at OSU. Now, whether that happens is another story. He's wearing a lot of Nike gear. I'm sure Nike might want Wolf and Hovland wearing that on the tour soon. But they're going to be loaded next year.
Hovland also told Holly Saunders, Tiger Who. So he might have been out of his world after...
he was on a high.
After winning the USA. No, I thought it was so interesting because you and I talked about... Ventura, who is also from, he's from Norway as well, right?
Yeah.
And that's who, like, Ventura was basically the guy who got Bratton over there. Like, he was this big time am, or junior, in Norway. And so when Bratton went to recruit him, he told this story. I can't remember where I saw it. I think it was on, I think Ryan Lavner wrote the piece for Golf Channel. And Bratton basically said, look, and this is what he said at, I think he said it at NCAAs as well. He was like, I know what a good golfer looks like as a junior. And when I saw Hovland, I was like, that is a really good golfer. That is somebody who's going to be really good in college. And he said that about Matthew Wolff at the NCAAs. He's like, I mean, he was easy to recruit. Like, you could close your eyes and recruit him. And he didn't say the same thing about Hovland, but he Bratton clearly has a lot of confidence in his ability to recruit guys that are going to be stars or superstars. And he sort of, I don't want to say lucked into Hovland, but he kind of stumbled upon him while recruiting Ventura, and he might have ended up getting a better guy. I mean, you know, Ventura's probably going to go on to have a at least somewhat of a pro career. I don't know what his ceiling is, but winning the USAM is not a joke, and especially the way he did it, it was pretty impressive.
Casey Dunn like recruiting by Alan Bratton.
Yeah, the guys who are good at it, they make it sound so easy. Yeah. You're just like, yeah, you just go get the best guy.
Well, that story was fascinating because not only did Bratton identify him, that was the only recruit Bratton was going to take was Hovland. And he waited till like the day before signing day. Like, Bratton was all in. He was either getting Hovland or nobody in a recruiting class. For golf, that's pretty risky. And I do want to give it up to Alan Bratton as well. You know, when they fired Mike McGraw, OSU lost again in the match play, lost to Alabama. They weren't winning national championships. And I think before the NCAAs, I came on and said, man, there's a lot of pressure on Alan Bratton. I mean, they fire Mike McGraw. They haven't won a national championship. But look what he's done in the last year. I mean, catting a guy to another USAM, second time he's done that with Peter Uihlein as well. They're loaded for bear next year. So Alan Bratton really, I think, along with Hovland, deserves a lot of credit because he's backed up Mike Holder's decision. He has come through big time. So he deserves a lot of credit for recruiting a Victor Hovland, not only when not a lot of people were, but pushing all his chips in and waiting on him because that's who he wanted bad. And that decision has completely paid off.
Maybe we need to get Alan Bratton on Ricky Fowler's bag.
I did laugh, you know, Kyle. Golf's the only sport where you can make your coach carry your stuff around like he's a freshman. Go get that. Did you think Victor told him to go get that out of the hole?
I hope so. I'm kidding. I love Joe Scovron. He's great. Great caddy for Ricky Fowler. We need to get Hovland on the podcast, though. I don't know if you read the story that Lavner wrote, but he was talking about how Hovland just like, he researches all these current events and he wants to talk about just political things and all this different stuff. I want to go like 2 hours with Hovland on the pod.
Yeah, he's interesting, right? He's got that like sly grin.
Yeah, at all like times. he's always in on the joke.
And he doesn't like, I did read that story, and there's times where he'll hit like 5 balls and just go play. Like, that's pretty incredible.
Very Rory-like.
So, I mean, and plus Hayden Wood won the OGA, the prestigious amateur tournament. He's gonna take over for Ventura, I would assume. So they're loaded. Yeah. Are people gonna tailgate this year at Karsten?
I hope so. I might. It's gonna be awesome.
I might be like in Wolf's gallery for the season. I might be like the
a Wolfie.
Yeah, I might be in his gallery. I might try to be on his bag. I might just start carrying his clubs without him asking me to.
That'll go over well. Okay, let's get to this week's uniform preview brought to you by Chris's University Spirit, your one-stop cowboy shop on Campus Corner, and be sure to shop online at chrisuniversityspirit.com. Carson, we're going to make our official predictions next week before the first game for what uniform we think Oklahoma State is going to wear, but I wanted to see if you had any thoughts just kind of surrounding that. Do we think that it'll be just the traditional white, orange, white for the first home game, or are you thinking they'll go something different?
That's kind of become tradition, hadn't it, Kyle, to wear just the traditional white, orange, white, albeit, you know, the helmet's changed. But yeah, that's kind of what I'm leaning towards. It seems as if, you know, those non-conference scrub games to start the year, they don't waste a flamboyant combination. So that's kind of what I'm leaning towards, aren't you?
Yes, but I do think with the new equipment guy, Justin Williams, I believe is his name, I think he's fine with mixing things up a little bit. So that would be my only sort of hesitation about picking it. I haven't zeroed in on my prediction yet, but that's the only thing that gives me a little pause.
Yeah, that's intriguing. I'm intrigued to see what all they're going to add this year. They always seem to add something. You know, the matte black helmet that they wore against Bedlam. Just I've been calling for that for a couple of years. They kind of had put that helmet away. It was good to see that one back.
Well, because last year, first game, they did go white, orange, white, but they mixed it up with the Patriot Pete, and that was good. So I could see something like that happening again.
Patriot Pete's grown on me quite a bit.
Yeah. At first, I'm with you. At first, I was like, eh. But then by the end of the year, when they wore it in the bowl game, I was like, that's pretty good.
Well, especially switch, like I said last show, the black face mask to go with the black jersey was exceptional.
Yeah, for sure.
So, yeah, I'm fired up, Kyle. I'm ready for the season. I'm ready for uni predictions. Did you win the contest last year? Or was it Southwell?
I think Southwell did. I don't think I've ever won it. Or maybe I did. I don't know. Okay, let's hear one more time from our sponsor, Chris's University Spirit, and then we will come back and wrap things up. Since I'm again without my files that have some of the old ad reads that we have had on here and a few other things, I wanted to take this opportunity to talk a little bit more about Chris's University Spirit. They've been a longtime sponsor of the Pistols Firing podcast, and they've also been a producer and distributor of our merchandise, the PFB shirts that you guys have ordered and wear and have told us that you have enjoyed. It's been, I don't really say this publicly often, but it's been just a pleasure to work with them. They've been awesome. I would encourage anyone who's living in Stillwater or, you know, any fraternity or sorority members that are thinking about ordering shirts or ordering apparel from anybody in Stillwater, they're great to work with, and I would encourage you guys toward them. And yeah, we appreciate their just sponsorship and just kind of mutual love for Oklahoma State and the community surrounding it. So you guys hit up Chris's when you're in Stillwater this year, and we'll get back to the show. Okay, Carson, I am about to have to go be on Tiger duty, but you wanted to discuss my Mike Yurcich piece. We were writing about the storylines on our website. We're kind of counting down the top storylines of the year. Number 10 for me was, why is Mike Yurcich not more beloved in Stillwater? I refuse to look at any of the 75 comments that are on that piece right now. but just your thoughts around that. And I know we've talked about Mike Yurcich a lot, but just any takeaways from that or anything around him?
Well, I mean, for me, I don't understand the hate. Look, I was one of his bigger critics when he was running at off tackle against West Virginia with no offensive line to speak of. He was dealt kind of a bad hand when he came in. I think most people, myself included, were like, why are they hiring a guy from Shippensburg? But just look at his results. You know, we talked about Mike Gundy's track record. Look at Mike Yurcich's. I mean, Mason Rudolph led the country in passing yards last year. That's called maximizing talent. Look at who he's recruited at quarterback. He recruited Mason Rudolph. He didn't inherit him. That's called recruiting. That's a big part of your job. He recruited Spencer Sanders. Probably had a hand in recruiting Drew Brown, who I like a lot. So when you look at his results, you look at his recruiting, I mean, what's not to like? And it's amazing. Anytime his name comes up on the blog, people just fire Yurcich. He's terrible, blah, blah. Like, based on what? What have you been watching? I know they didn't score every possession last year. You don't need to point out the, you know, the TCU game when they had to punt. I mean, I get it, but I mean, just his track record speaks for itself. And I think when he moves on and people will, it's almost like people love the offense coordinator when he's not the offense coordinator. Like, everyone loved Dana, mm-hmm. but he had struggles in Bedlam when he was running it against a 5-2 defense of Brent Venables. He would not get away from it. It cost him the game. Todd Monken was beloved, but he was only there one, like those two guys were only there 1 year. They weren't there long enough to be derided or to really fail at a prolonged level. So I think it's the most unpopular guy on campus is always the offensive coordinator, and the most popular is always the backup quarterback, and that's just kind of the way football is.
Yeah, I think it hurts Yurcich that he doesn't really have, and I wrote, part of my piece was kind of based around this. He doesn't really have a shtick. Like with Dana, he was crazy. He pounded energy drinks and, you know, pulled his hair out and whatever. Monken, obviously, I mean, you experienced this, the best quote in the state for a couple of years. And so he was just easy to, he just always had, you know, stats are for, what do you say, stats are for nerds?
For losers.
We still need to make that shirt. That's pretty good. But Yurcich is just kind of a guy. I mean, he's just a normal guy who is actually fairly funny, but it doesn't always, I think, come across like that to fans. So I don't know. The relationship, the perception there has always been, for whatever reason, just kind of not galvanizing, really. He's just been a lightning rod the entire time, and I think that is, it's not really by any fault of his own, but it's also hard to overcome. And so, you know, I think one of the more interesting things that came out of Media Day in Stillwater is that when Gundy was talking about Yurcich, he was praising him, said he'll be a head coach soon, which was not surprising. But then after that, he said something along the lines of, I would be surprised if our future coaches aren't people that have already touched the program. So that's either former assistants or former players, or, I mean, we're already seeing that with Greg Richmond, right? And Gundy's been around for so long that he's able to kind of draw from either guys that he coached with, played for him, that coached for him, or whatever. And so I think that coaching tree, the Oklahoma State coaching tree in the future, is going to be really interesting in sort of the post Yurcich era.
J.W. Walsh, come on down. Is that what you're thinking?
The first 27-year-old offensive coordinator in Big 12 history.
Yeah, I think Josh Henson's certainly in line for that. If Yurcich were to leave, I would love to see Marcus Arroyo back on campus. I'm sure Kyle Boone would love to have Arroyo back as well. But no, it's all about coaching trees. I mean, look, no one knew who Todd Monken was when Mike Gundy hired him. They had coached together on Les Miles' staff, so a lot of that's relationships. But no, I kind of think Yurcich has the opportunity to be kind of choosy with where he goes. I don't think he's just going to leave for a Tulane, or maybe he would. I know he talked to Tulane last year. Maybe he would take a Tulane job. But if I was him, you're making close to $1 million in Stillwater. I would wait till I go to a legit football program that will be easier to win at.
Yeah.
Just a matter of what jobs come open and who's interested. Because as Bill Haston mentioned on our podcast, just look at all the head coaches that have come from the offensive coordinator position with Fedora, Monken, on down the line, Holgerson. So he's definitely in line for one. And I don't get the hate at all, but I guess this is what it is. That comes with the territory with offensive coordinator. I mean, people hated Gundy when he was calling plays, remember? You know, you don't want to be the OC.
Yeah. Two more things real quick. James Washington is going to be very good in the NFL.
Holy moly, he's going to be a star. I mean, I know he's going against like second and third team guys right now, and it's preseason.
Yeah.
But the Colorado defensive back, Owuzi, that made a good interception for the Cowboys, he still has flames coming off his jersey from how bad Washington torched him. So it doesn't – like, he's going to be playing guys that are worse than that guy in the NFL because he's going to be on the second or third corner. And as we're seeing, he can turn a bad pass into a touchdown because he was underthrown on that one where he just mossed the guy. I mean, he's going to be awesome, and it's going to be a lot of fun to watch. And I think I read where he's already working with Roethlisberger with the first team, so – I can't wait to watch him.
Their first depth chart had him as like the fifth guy or sixth or seventh guy or something. It was something absurd, which I guess those things are worthless anyway. But Yeah, I think he's going to be really good. Oklahoma State's kind of had a not so secret history of star wide receivers in college not living up to their potential in the pros between Rashawn Woods and Justin Blackmon. I guess Dez sort of exceeded his potential probably, but hopefully Washington is more in the Dez range than he is the other two. I forgot what my other thing was. Do you have anything else?
I think that's it. I mean,
Gundy's
we'll
hair.
do our yeah, that was much ado about nothing. He still has a mullet. It's fine. He just gets that preseason trim, or else it'll just get out of hand.
Let's see here. Joel Klatt in town for game one.
Yeah, let me shameless plug. I interviewed Joel Klatt for our college football preview show that airs tonight at 7 o'clock. It's Thursday night. I don't know if you're gonna get the podcast up in time, but we're an hour-long show. Joel Klatt's going to be on, Sam Mays, Gabe Eichard, and Jake Trotter. So it's going to be a good show. And it was fun to talk to Joel. Joel, for me, is the best analyst in the business now. I think he's the best. And he's the only one that sticks up for the Big 12 and how the football's played. And he has to set people like Cowherd straight on points per drive and how football's played in the 21st century. So always good to talk to Joel.
Yeah, he we're gonna try to get him on a pod this year. We've got some sort of mutual connections there, so we're gonna try to make that happen. I remember my other thing. We wrote on Wednesday about what worries. So me and the two Kyles did kind of a back and forth on what worries us about Oklahoma State's 2018 season is what's the and maybe we you and I talked about this last week, but what's the primary thing that sticks out to you in terms of just how this could all go really badly? I don't know if it can go as bad as 2014, but just sort of in that direction.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you start with the quarterback. If Taylor Cornelius turns into a walk-on, and Drew Brown turns into a guy who transferred from Hawaii, if the quarterback position does not solidify itself, that's an obvious concern. But for me, Kyle, it's along the defensive line. I know it's been good. It's been one of the probably the strength of the defense. Can they stop anybody from running the football? I mean, I remember that TCU game, third down, third and four, the whole stadium knows they're running, and they run for a touchdown with the game on the line. I just, for me, it's the defense, Kyle. Can they get enough stops? Can they get their points per drive down? They're not going to shut people out. We all understand that. But can they show signs of improvement, have that first-year mentality that you mentioned with Glenn Spencer and Bill Young? Where it could go badly is people running wide open like the Kansas State game, like the Iowa State game. The secondary, they're still young. Those corners, I know they have experience now, but they're still young. They're still prone to give up big play. I think big plays and just the defense not playing well, I think is my biggest concern.
Yeah, I think I do think depth is a little bit of a concern. You've already seen some kind of chatter about just the linebacker depth. They lose Patrick Macon. I think they lost somebody else for a little while. So I'm interested to see the depth chart. I think it comes out either later this week, beginning of next week. We'll probably have some stuff on that. But yeah, I don't know. It's both exciting and terrifying because it could go one of many directions. It could be, I don't think it's going to be like 2014 because I think the infrastructure is better, but I think it could be like 2012. You go 7-5 in the regular season. That's not that good for the program for where it's at right now. But it could also be like, I don't know. It could be 10-2, could be 9-3. I have no idea, which is part of the fun of this whole deal that I guess we'll start next week.
You know what I'm looking forward to most, actually, now that I think about it? One of the things I'm looking forward to most is Calvin Bundage turning into like Oboe for OU and just terrorizing the quarterback and doing the Conor McGregor, Vince McMahon walk. I need that gif back in my life. So I'm looking forward to
No,
that.
it'll be there. Calvin Bundage might be a pro.
He's a little undersized. He's a little skinny. He would have a hard time getting past the Orlando Browns of the world, but he's going to be a really good college player.
Could he play DB in the NFL? Is he fast enough?
Don't know. I mean, I never would have thought Trey Flowers would be a corner, so what do I know?
Yeah.
But
Where's Adam Lunt?
yeah,
Would
we'll have to get Lunt's take on that for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, Carson, I am headed out of town. at the end of this weekend, but I'll be back and ready to roll for our first game next week. You're going to be there, right?
I'll be there. Game week, baby.
I'm planning on being there as well. So we will meet up, and college football's back, baby.
Can't wait. We'll see you then.
Okay.